Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on a Tuesday, live in Los Angeles. LA's feeling pretty good about itself this morning. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. What a crazy NBA final I watched last night. Yes, it's the final. I'm sorry, Milwaukee, Atlanta. That's the final. We are watching the finals. It's a great finals. It just happens to be, you know, out west, just like the Yankee-Red Sox series for years and years was the World Series, just like the SEC Championship is the College Football Championship 2 out of 4 years. Joy, how are you? That was great. That was fantastic.
These series have had everything. So it's a lot of physicality in this Suns Clippers series.
Old dudes beat the kids last night.
Yeah.
Old dudes. So, I want to start the show using a word I'll use 2 or 3 or 5 times here in the next few minutes. And the word is available. Who are your best friends? Do they have the fanciest cars? Did they go to the coolest prep schools? Or are they available in times of crisis for you and your family? Kawhi Leonard is not available again for the Clippers, and Paul George just pulled off one of the greatest halves in NBA playoff history. But Paul George isn't just about last night. When Paul George had a stinker earlier in the series, there he was, first guy to talk to the media, available on the bad nights too. A lot of people in the NBA want to be paid like ones, demand to be ones, but they don't want to do all the one stuff. Paul George is a two, right? Maybe he's the one on this team. 83% field goal, 75% on threes, 100% on free throws in the second half against a very good Suns team. The truth is, Paul and Kawhi are very similar. In fact, I could make the argument Paul George is the closest thing to Kawhi in the league. Strong, wiry players, same size, great wing defenders, went to California non-power basketball schools, both chose the Clippers over the Lakers. But one is viewed, Kawhi, as clutch and Paul as viewed as inconsistent. Does availability matter? That feels like a clutch asset to me. Kawhi is missing again. And here is Paul George, and listen to this stat, who has played 130 more minutes than the next closest NBA playoff player. One of the reasons Michael Jordan's flu game is so iconic, because Michael had 102 fever and was available. Kyrie Irving, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard. Yeah, I know it's injuries, but it's more than fair to say, I don't know if they'll be available. Sometimes Kawhi, Kyrie are not available emotionally. Anthony Davis sometimes not available physically. I think we have to kind of reboot how we think about clutch. Are you showing up to work? Well, it's injuries. Yes, I'm not disputing that, but being hurt a lot makes you less of a reliable teammate. I look at these playoffs and I'm like, let's go to Paul George, Mr. Inconsistent. The three biggest games for Paul George in these playoffs. Game 7 against Dallas, he played 44 minutes, 22 points, 10 assists, 6 rebounds. Game 6, closeout game against Utah, 46 minutes, 28, 7, and 9. Game 5 against the Suns, 41 minutes, 41 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists. In those three games, he missed one total free throw. Paul has his bad moments, but they sure don't seem to be in the biggest spots. And what I like about Paul George is not just that he gives you 45 minutes every time there's a big game. He plays defense in every big game. He gives you physicality in every big game. He talks, win or lose, after every big game. There's just an availability quotient to him. He is there mentally ready to go. He's there physically ready to go. And I can't simultaneously criticize Anthony Davis, Kyrie, and then not give Paul George credit for what he is and they're not. Ready to play 45 minutes every big game. Here's a stat for you. So last night was the 18th Clipper playoff game, right? Paul George has 20-plus points in all of them. Four guys have done that ever. KD, Kobe, MJ, and Paul George. Like, we gotta reboot a little bit what we think clutch is. And it's not just his points. Paul's always there. Always there, good or bad, 45 minutes, great defense, incredible effort, talk to the media afterwards, take the bullets when they're flying. And it's not a shot at Kawhi. I know he got hurt. But Popovich got tired of him. Toronto could never figure him out. Last year, the chemistry was terrible with him. He's nonverbal and communicative. That's part of being available. He's not available that way. Paul George is. Boogie Cousins summed up and defended Paul George after last night's Clipper win and Paul George performance.
I don't know where this trolling has come from, where the internet controls the narrative about these players. It's becoming foolish, man. Like I said earlier in the year, that's one of the most special players to ever lace his shoes up. Get his dude his flowers, man. I don't understand the slander. It's becoming quite silly now.
And from that, I want to segue into another story about availability. So during the summer when there were no sports, Joy and I talked a lot about Michael Jordan's 10-part documentary. Now, Michael Jordan, you could do another 10-part documentary. I'd watch that, too. He's a fascinating guy, probably the best basketball player the world's ever had. LeBron, Magic certainly get arguments. But when Michael did that 10-part documentary, no question, it took Michael's view of the dynasty. But I was there throughout it, and it was a truthful documentary leaning, like all documentaries, on the person who controlled the documentary. Scottie Pippen thought he was minimized in the documentary and therefore now has written a book to avenge those feelings. Scottie's book is not accurate. It's a lot of BS. It's a lot of reaching for stuff that didn't really exist. Yesterday, he was on Dan Patrick's show. He was criticizing Phil Jackson because when Michael left, it was Scottie's team. Remember that? Michael went and played baseball, Scottie's team. And in that first year, they got to the playoffs. They were a very good team, by the way. They were still a very good team, won 55 regular season games. The year before, they won only 57 regular season games, won the title. And at the end of the biggest game of the year, Phil Jackson did not draw the play up for Scottie Pippen.
If you knew that Scottie Pippen had been with the Bulls from 87, battled through the Pistons, and every other team that we had to get to those three championships, wouldn't you give Scottie Pippen one opportunity to get a last second shot without Michael Jordan? Like, 1 year without Michael Jordan, can I get one shot? Like, I'm doing all the dirty work.
That's BS. They actually drew up two plays for Scottie Pippen, and he missed on both. Therefore, they finally went to this shot. Sorry, radio audience. Tony Kukoc, now that wasn't the shot, but they'd gone throughout that game to Pippen twice. First of all, let's acknowledge this. Kyrie and Kevin Love did not get a lot of credit for the Cavs title. LeBron did. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played with Magic on the Showtime Lakers. They're known as Magic Showtime Lakers, and Kareem's the leading scorer in league history. So let's be honest. When you play with a Magic and a Michael and a LeBron, you get minimized. They're called Magic Showtime Lakers. Many people believe Kareem's the best player ever if you really go to stats and numbers and longevity and defense and offense and unstoppable. It's Magic Showtime Lakers. Kyrie hit the big shot for the Cavs. It's LeBron's title with the Cavs. That's the reality of it. So Scottie is never going to get the love that he probably deserves because Michael was the best player and the most glamorous and the coolest and had the biggest shoe deal. So that's just the reality of playing with the greatest Batman ever. You get minimized as a Robin. But I covered Scotty for a couple years in Portland. And here's the part that Scotty doesn't want to talk about. Scotty always wanted to be viewed as a one, paid like a one, get all the accessories of a one, the respect of a one. But if he played poorly, he wouldn't be around for the tough questions. That's part of being a one. Availability. Paul George, availability. You want to be a one, you got to be ready to play, ready to talk about failure, ready, regardless of how you feel, the flu game, you got to be there. Scotty, and I've seen this a lot in pro sports, a lot of people want to be seen as a one, talked about as a one, paid as a one, but they don't want to do all the one stuff. And the longer Pippen took control of the Bulls after Michael left, the more he unraveled. And here's another thing that's not talked about when I covered Scotty. The idea that Phil Jackson did not draw a play up for him. That's very interesting. Scotty was never a closer. He was just an incredible player and an incredible athlete. But I covered the best non-final series, I believe, ever. Lakers, Blazers, went seven. That's the iconic Kobe to Shaq slam dunk. I was in behind the basket. I covered that series. Unbelievable. There for every minute of every game. Best series, non-final series I've ever seen. So if Phil Jackson is racist, and that was the insinuation, for not drawing up a play for Scottie Pippen instead Kukoc, though Phil drew up a couple for Scottie, go to that game seven. Scottie was 3 for 10. I thought he's a one. Do you know what he was in the fourth quarter of that game as a Blazer for the Blazers against the Lakers? He was 0 for 3 and a minus 17 in the fourth quarter. Mike Dunleavy didn't draw up plays for Scottie Pippen because that wasn't what Scottie was. Scottie was a slasher, a hustler, a defender, a great athlete. He's not the guy you drew up plays for. In that Blazer-Lakers series, go to the fourth quarter, I'm there. They drew him up for Steve Smith. They drew him up for Arvidas. They drew him up for Rasheed Wallace. I think 6-7 shots. They didn't draw any up for Scotty. Scotty's not the guy. In fact, when you drew a play up for Scotty, it was mostly to soothe his ego, to make sure he felt included, not because he was the best option. He was never the best option for the final shot with the Bulls. It was MJ1. Sometimes it was Kerr. It was Paxson. Sometimes it was Kukoc. Those are great shooters. Scotty never was. Ron Harper was actually, some could argue, a better, as a reserve, a better pure offensive talent than Scotty. So Michael Jordan's documentary was a Michael-leaning version of the truth. Scotty's book, from what I can tell, sounds like a lot of misremembering. Phil Jackson loves Scotty, but everybody's always understood the term Robin comes from Scottie Pippen. He was not available. The minute it was Scotty's team, Michael goes plays baseball. It's Scotty's team. There are people in Chicago that still refer to him as 1.8. 1.8 seconds left, Scotty wouldn't go into a game, playoff game. Why? Because Phil wouldn't draw the playoff for him. 1.8. That is some of his legacy. So there's a big difference between Michael's documentary, which leans Michael, it's his documentary, right? And Scotty's book, which feels like it was written to avenge him being minimized, which he has a right to do. He's going to make the media rounds. But I just don't feel like I should elevate or extend these Scotty stories, which just aren't true. I was there in Portland. I covered him. Want to be paid like a one, didn't want to really be a one. And there's a lot that comes with that. And some players are simply better served to be Robins. Great Robins. A lot of money in being a Robin. A lot of fame in being a Robin. Really good life being a Robin. But boy wonder isn't Batman. All right, good stuff today. More on the Clippers, more on Pippen. By the way, we will, at the top of next hour, we had an exercise today as we prepare for our show. So we do this. it was the last thing we were talking about as we prep for the show today. And we were talking about, is Pippen the best Robin ever? Because he's obviously, that's the term. I'd never used it as a sportscaster before Scottie Pippen. It is amazing if you start going to the great Robins in the history of sports. I think you'll be shocked by how good they are. There's been a lot of great number twos who have mostly embraced it, are okay with it. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with being, listen, if you know, there's nothing wrong. Vice president is a good job too. It's a good job. All right. Cedric Sabalos next hour as well. He was fun last time we had him on.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
You know, it's interesting. I was just talking during the break. I follow politics, but I'm not a political person. But one of the reasons I could never work for like Fox News or MSNBC, nothing against the people, there's lots of talent, but it's grievance television. Essentially, it's grievance. I've got a grievance. I want to go on and talk about it. Michael Jordan's documentary felt like a celebration and the story of the greatest team ever. Scottie's book is a grievance book. I didn't get this. We didn't get this. This guy didn't pay attention to me. I'm not interested in that. Like, I'm not interested in that kind of television, those kind of books, those kind of people. Grievances. Go be angry on your own time. The documentary was a celebration of the greatest dynasty. And when I think when Joy and I watched that documentary, the one thing, at least I'm not going to speak for Joy, that I took from it was, damn, it's hard. I mean, it was just like Jerry Krause and the ownership and Rodman's nonsense. And it, my takeaway was, wow, what a journey. It's like watching something on the Rolling Stones years later and you got a drug episode and somebody doesn't show up to a concert and the roadies go to the wrong city and you're like, man, how did the Rolling Stones pull it off? That's what I felt like Michael Jordan's documentary was. It was a look at how damn hard it is to keep the biggest rock band in the NBA ever. Scottie's book, all the excerpts feel like grievance. I didn't get this. You didn't give me that. I'm not into those type of people. So I can't watch cable news or cable politics. It's nothing against the people. The people are talented. Tucker Carlson, Rachel Maddow, very talented. But I don't want to be around grievance people. Like, I've been around those people. They wear me out. And Scottie, on this book, I look at it and I think, oh, it's just going to wear me out. It's going to be like 4 hours of wearing me out what you didn't get. And Joy said it during the break. Scottie is remembered, I'll let you say it, quite appropriately.
I think he gets the absolute most amount of proper credit. Every time anyone brings up Michael and talks about him being the GOAT, immediately everyone says he didn't win anything until he got Scottie.
We say that.
Yes. What is a bigger compliment than that? You're never going to get more credit for that dynasty than Michael Jordan. And you shouldn't. And if you think you do, we should probably just stop talking about this altogether. So what more credit do you want? Everyone says he needed you to win. That is the ultimate compliment.
And Michael said that during the documentary.
Yes.
None of this happens without Scottie.
What else do you want?
Would the book be written without the documentary? No.
No.
So that it's a reaction. I'm going to avenge and some of the stuff. And I got nothing against him. I enjoyed covering Scottie. I liked him. But let me tell you something, folks. Damian Lillard is a one. He talks like it. He acts like it. He's there on bad games. He's there on good games. That's what a one looks like. That's what a one looks like. It looks like Steph Curry. I'll take fewer shots. I'll bring in KD. That's what a one looks like. It's more than just getting paid. That's not what a one's about. It's about doing the interviews. It's about dealing with crap. It's about, I mean, like Paul George last night, and I've said it. I never had more respect for Kevin Durant than when he lost that series to the Bucks. I was like, damn, total respect for Kevin Durant. You don't have to win finals MVP for me to go, that's the most impressed I've ever been with Kevin Durant. Paul George, last night, you're like, this the whole playoffs for Paul George. That dude is at the podium, win or lose. Paul George is there every time. He missed those free throws. First guy to the podium. That's what a one does. Scotty wouldn't do that. He wouldn't do that. By the way, I want to talk a little Clippers before I go to Joy. So last night was obviously a great game. It's the finals. Those are the two best teams. If the Clippers win, with or without Kawhi, they're going to beat the Bucks. And if the Suns beat the Clippers, I think they'll be favored and they'll beat the Bucks. But it's interesting. When Chris Paul is off the floor and he plays about 30, 31 minutes, that series becomes very quickly old dudes against young dudes. So you start looking at the Clippers roster. Morris, 10 years in the league. Beverly, 9. Reggie Jackson, 10. Paul George, 11. Batum, 13. DeMarcus Cousins, 10. And then you start looking at the Suns. It's Mikal Bridges, 3. Ayton, 3. Booker, 6. Craig, 4. Last night, this is why the Clippers are going to be hard to bury. As they say, it's not their first rodeo. It's one thing to get a series lead on a team. It's another to bury them. And last night, Phoenix was tight because that was the biggest game for every single person in that Suns organization except Jay Crowder, who's been to a finals. That was the biggest game for Monty Williams. That was the biggest game for Chris Paul. That was the biggest game for all those young guys. And this Clipper team, say what you want, but those guys are 10-2 in games 3 through 7 in the series. Okay, so again, they're not great early, but to bury the Clippers is going to be a lot of work. I mean, Kawhi wasn't there. Their best big wasn't there. Serge Ibaka's not there. They're on the road. They're down 3-1. And of course, the Clippers played their greatest game in the playoffs. This is what they've done over and over. Now, can they do it again twice? Can they win at home and beat Phoenix and Phoenix again? I've got my doubts. But what you saw last night, biggest game for everybody in the Suns, and they look tight. And for the Clippers, it was just another big game on a long journey in the playoffs, and they played more physical, less desperate, less tight, and Paul George stood up. So there is you saw this with Dallas. You saw it with Utah. It's one thing for a young team to get a lead in a series. Way harder to bury the old dudes. Last year, the bubble was an exception. Young players flourished. Last night looked like a playoff game I grew up with. Really talented young team, really good old team, and the old dudes just hit the big shots, played much looser, jumped out to a lead, felt like they always controlled the basketball game. Paul George talked about that afterwards.
They was going to finish this series off. They was going to have to work for it. And that was just the mentality we came into this. We wasn't going to back down. We wasn't just going to throw in the towel. The fact of the matter is, they got to beat us.
Not sure they will. We'll see. Two more games left, one in L.A., one in Phoenix. I think we're going 7. I think we're going 7 in these NBA finals. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
I'm on the Suns bandwagon, but I'm all for another game 7.
Oh, last night was just such great basketball. Like 11, I mean, you had like how many guys played substantial minutes in that thing? Like you had 10 guys for one team, 9-10 for the other. I mean, it's just they're emptying out the benches. Everybody that can play, everybody available, get on the floor. Just fantastic basketball.
You know, the NBA has gotten a lot of criticism over the past couple years, but I thought they did an unbelievable job with the bubble, having been in the middle of their season, having to navigate a pandemic and make it happen. The bubble was live sports for us, which we hadn't had. They figured out the aesthetics. It was interesting and new. The young guys thrived. Like, we didn't really know how to digest what was going on. Guys missed their families. Like, it was, but they made it happen. And then this year, it's a condensed season with a shortened off season. We don't have LeBron past the first round, and it's been incredible basketball. We have all these game sevens. Fans are getting to experience guys like Devin Booker and guys that have been playing great during the regular season, Trae Young. Like, it's been a really great two seasons. Actually,
imagine if the NFL playoffs were missing 7 quarterbacks. It wouldn't feel the same. We're missing Kawhi. We miss Kyrie. We miss Embiid's hurt.
Harden
AD was hurt. And the playoffs have been great. Yep. It tells you, this is something we talked about this week. The quality of depth of global basketball talent is today insane. That you can lose seven stars and you can get the quality you got last night, Suns Clippers. I got that without Kawhi Leonard. The game's that good without a top three player in the league.
Yeah, and the quality is really the point, because if we lost all of those quarterbacks, the play wouldn't be as good. Like, we'd be relying on defenses. It'd be a lot of running. Like, it would just be a different game that we were watching, and guys are just stepping up. It's been great. So Trae Young's MRI yesterday revealed that he suffered a bone bruise when he stepped on the official's foot in game three. So he is listed as questionable for game four tonight. He'll continue to get extensive treatment leading up into the game in hopes that he'll be able to play. And coach Nate McMillan said he wouldn't make a call on Young's availability until shortly before tip-off. So he won't find out if Trae's going to be available until right before the game. He did have 35 points and four assists in game three, but they pretty much started to separate from the Hawks once Trae was out.
It's even though the series is just slight edge Milwaukee, it feels like Milwaukee's series. You could convince me this morning with a good argument the Clippers are going to win this series. Now, I don't think they will, but when you watch the Suns and the Clippers, there are nights like last night where you're like, I'm not sure Phoenix is the best team at all. I feel, even in the game they lost, I feel like Milwaukee's the better roster, bigger, stronger, more experienced, more depth. I honestly feel like I'd be surprised and disappointed if Atlanta won. I think the NBA is better served having the better team in the finals.
They do feel like the better team, but it's similar to when, you know, Kawhi went out. Immediately I was like, oh, I guess the Clippers are done. And then they're like, we're not done. I'm like, I just have to stop burying the Clippers. Now, if Trae Young is not available tonight,
It feels over.
So hopefully he is available, because we do want to see everyone at their full speed and full capacity, win or lose. The Bucks are favored by 7 tonight, according to Fox Bet, which feels about right, especially if they don't know if Trae's going to be out there. And even if he is there, he's probably not going to be 100% because he's going through all of this treatment just to be available. It's just disappointing. It's just been so many injuries this season. It would have been nice to see everybody through the rest of the way. And Trae's been incredible, but we'll find out shortly before the game if he's going to be available. So Cam Newton isn't looking like a lock to be a starter for the Patriots week one. The team is reportedly headed towards a true quarterback competition when training camp begins next month. Mac Jones has impressed teammates and coaches during OTAs and minicamp. And according to Mike Giardi, one offensive teammate even said Mac sees the game the way Josh McDaniels sees it.
Oh, boy. Well, doesn't this come down to this? If you believe the Patriots are a playoff team, now, I do, but nobody thinks they're the Bills or the Chiefs. And I don't think they're the Colts.
They're a wild card team.
Right. If you're a wild card team, and I think both you and I kind of see them as a 6 or 7 team to get in, you better make a decision on this. This is not a back and forth thing, because these are two different style of quarterbacks. So you have got to make a decision on what kind of team we want to be. Because if you look at their schedule, Joy, the first 4 weeks, they play three excellent defenses. Brian Flores and the Dolphins, the Saints, and the Bucs defense. Now, the Jets defense is the strength of the team, but I won't classify them as a great defense. So if you're going to mess around, is Mac Jones ready for that first month? My guess is no. You have to make a decision on what this team's going to be, because if you start looking at the AFC, one game is going to decide it. You go through the seven teams to make the playoffs, you get to about 9, and you have to start eliminating maybe like a Patriot or a Dolphin team. So, you know, if you're going to go Mac Jones, then you better go early in the preseason and get him all those snaps.
Well, you know how I feel about quarterbacks. If you have more than one, you don't have one at all.
Right.
But I also feel like I agree with you. What style of play? Because these are two different styles. Now, sometimes you have a quarterback competition and they're sort of similar styles, so you're trying to evaluate who is better at that style.
Right.
But these are two different styles. And I think for Mac Jones, there's no real pressure to have him out there. But if it's going to be his team, it's got to be his team.
Yes.
And Cam is a star. So that's like, from a mentality and from a leadership standpoint and from a locker room standpoint, who are we following? Who are we getting behind? Well, because that's a very strong personality, and he's been there already in Cam Newton, and he's an established star. And if you go with Mac Jones and he struggles, which is completely reasonable because he's a rookie quarterback, then it feels like, oh, we didn't give him enough time.
if you have Flacco and Lamar, they are so divergent in terms of what they are.
Right.
You have to commit to one of them. Once you went with Lamar, it's over for Flacco.
Yeah.
We have to build a completely different offense. If you're going to go with Cam, it's going to be a power quarterback. You have a quarterback that runs a power game. You're going to be a running football team that throws substantially less. Mac Jones is a distributor.
Right.
You could throw 45 times a game with Mac. A lot of stuff. Get it out quick. So to me, whatever decision you make, you better make it and stick with it. This is not a back and forth offense. It could get really cloudy really quick. Joy of the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
So the Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan stuff. Scottie also called Michael selfish, which, for the record, Michael could be selfish. Like, if you go and you find, I don't care if it's Jay-Z, I don't care if it's Willie Nelson, I don't care if it's Michael Jordan. To be a star, you have to sacrifice things and people. You won't be the life of the party. You won't have the social circle. To be great, number one, you got to be selfish. Kobe at times was selfish. Shaq at times was selfish. Michael was selfish. That's kind of the game, right? Like when you find these great LeBron James, 16 years old, you start building a company around LeBron. It's LeBron's world, and you acquiesce to what LeBron needs. It's a little selfish. I'm always going to defend superstars. I don't care if it's Ronaldo, Messi. I don't care if it's – it doesn't matter to me. Lindros or Sidney Crosby in his prime, Alex Ovechkin. It doesn't matter the sport. If you're a superstar, I'm going to give you some selfish. So that claim that Michael quitting for baseball is selfish, I'm going to give Michael that one. I'm going to give Michael a little selfish. You get a little selfish. If you're Elon Musk and the world you're in is there because of you and revolves around your decisions, Elon gets to be a little selfish. That's what the company is. SpaceX. Fine company.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, 3-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler, TJ Hushmanzada, and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
So some thoughts from Rick Bucher, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Let's have him join us live. Thoughts on last night. So let's start with Rick. Do you view the series differently as the old dudes beat up on the young kids last night? Do you view it this morning differently than you did before that game?
No, I always thought that was going to be the story between these two teams. Obviously, there's one old guy on the other side of the equation. If I look at last night, though, I think really what it came down for me is looking at the Suns' two best players in Devin Booker and Chris Paul, and Devin Booker's game not having matured enough, and Chris Paul's having matured too much. He's playing the old guy, I've got to fool the referee, I'm living off of guile game, and he's not getting it done that way. And meanwhile, Devin Booker has not ever had the experience of running a team, particularly at this level. He's done it and with mixed success during the regular season. So if you don't have either one of those guys operating at optimum value and ability, then that's going to take away your third best player, DeAndre Ayton, who really lives off of what those two guys do. So the Clippers are the older, more experienced team. The hedge on that is they don't always play like the older, more experienced team. When they do, you get results like last night. When they don't, then you get results like you did in game four.
Yeah, it's, you know, Paul George's, he had one of the great halves of all time. I said this earlier, one of the reasons Kyrie, AD, Kawhi Leonard, I don't always know emotionally what I get in big games. I don't always know physically what I get. You know, we always talk about AD is the world's best two. is it possible that Paul George is, this sounds weird, he's a one, but he's a lower one. You know what I mean?
Like, no, when I would say, he's a hologram. He can be a one, he can be a two, but you never know which one you're going to get. Here's the reality. Everybody wants to get to this place where we're comfortable with Paul George. To your point, we want to say this is what Paul George is. Folks, I have an announcement for you. We're all on this boat. It's going to be rocky until Paul George stops playing. We're never getting to land, okay? We're always going to be on the boat, and it's always going to be pitching one way or another. You are going to get games where he looks like a one, where he's amazing. And then you're going to get quarters where he's going to look amazing. The third quarter, he was on. First quarter, he was a disaster. I mean, it was fortunate that all the other Clippers had it going. The Clippers are at their best, and Paul George is at his best when he defends, when he rebounds, and he sees himself as part of this collective offensively. When he's aggressive, but he's not trying to do too much.
Yeah.
Offensively, his game is a real feel and flow game. So it's going to look good at times, and then times it's not. Game four, there was no flow to that game. Paul George, no flow to his offensive game. Game five, Clippers find some flow. The ball's moving. Everybody's got it going. Paul George joins the party, and you've got it going. I think that's the distinction, is that we want to put Paul George in that category as a fire starter, and he's really not. He has the talent to be, but his decision-making ultimately does not allow him to be that. So if you can minimize the decisions that he has to make, if he's just decisive, I'm either going to go or I'm going to move it offensively, and then he rebounds and he defends the way he can because he's such an elite athlete, then you are getting the best of Paul George. And by the way, let's not be giving him an out because he's played the most minutes of anybody in the playoffs, as if fatigue is somehow the reason that we get these up and down performances. His first quarter was his bad quarter. His third quarter was his best quarter. If I'm going to have an issue with fatigue, I would think it would happen in the second half rather than at the beginning of the game.
All right, Scottie Pippen's got a book out. I don't think he would have written it without the documentary by Michael Jordan. It feels like a lot of grievances. It feels like cable political television where it's just grievance, grievance, grievance.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Jordan's documentary was celebrating what was great and rocky and tough about the dynasty. There's claims now from Scottie that he didn't get a final shot. Kukoc did. It was racial with Phil Jackson. What's your reaction to that?
Is the book called Axe to Grind? Was that the title of the book? Because it should have been. Look, that's who Scottie is. The idea that Phil Jackson's decision to have Tony Kukoc take the last shot in the game. I mean, at the time, nobody looked at it and went, wow, that's a curious decision. Why is he dissing Scottie like that? It was more like, yeah, I could see why he would do that, because Tony is the better knockdown shooter in the last situation like that. So, and by the way, did he not? Yeah, he made the shot. So what are we talking about? Right. Why are we re-adjudicating this at this point? Here's the one thing I will tell you, is that at that time, and with Scottie's era of NBA players, the belief was that the rise of European players was the NBA's way of maintaining a certain percentage of white players in the league. The U.S. American-born white players weren't making it in, very, very minimal number. And the belief was, among players in the NBA at the time, was that the reason the Euros were gaining popularity and traction was because it allowed the league to maintain a certain number of white players in it. So I don't know if that thought, that whether you believe it or not, that theory is what informed some of what Scottie was saying. But, I mean, let's face it, whether he's saying that Phil was racist toward Kobe or Scottie, there was never any indication. Now, Phil could be selfish. Phil could be like, I'm going to do what's best for me. But I always got the sense that Phil's decisions were based on how do I win, how to maintain my championships. And and nothing beyond that. I've just, there was never a glimmer in all the time that I covered Phil Jackson, whether it was in L.A. or Chicago, that I ever got the sense that there was ever a decision made based on race.
Rick Bucher, got to run. Good seeing you, bud. Fox Sports NBA. Thank you, Rick. Do appreciate it. By the way, Spotlight Comfort, tanklessmadesimple.com, Navien, tankless water heaters. Save money, save time. But for the record, Kukoc was a really good player. At the time, I've said this 100 times, he was, you know, it's not like he's Dirk Nowitzki, but he was pre-Dirk. He was a really, really good player. He was, and in fact, we thought he was going to be greater than he was initially until Pippen and Jordan pushed him around a little bit. But Kukoc was a really good player. He was a really natural scorer, good ball handler for his size, great shooter. Hour two coming up. How good of a Robin was Pippen? Next.